All right. Felton here with you. And, you know, we promised that we would get you a blues legend in here this afternoon, and we have got him here with us, Charlie Musselwhite, joining us. Charlie, it is an honor to have you here.
My pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
No problem. You're playing at the Center for the Arts this evening in Grass Valley.
Yeah.
Showtime 8 o'clock, and I imagine you brought a band with you.
I did.
All right. Looking forward to it. And Paul just told me there are still tickets available. So just come on up to the door. We'll sell you a ticket, and we're going to have a big old dance party tonight, aren't we?
We're going to have a heck of a good time. We're going to blow all the blues away.
That's good. You know, a lot of people have been storing up some blues the last few months and stuff. I think tonight's a good way to get rid of them.
Well, you know, John Lee Hooker said blues is a healer, so it'll take care of all your problems.
Now, John Lee was a healer.
Come early, stay late, and won't be no blues left when we're through.
Oh, man. Let's talk about John for a little bit. Now, I know when you moved to the Bay Area, you must have become acquaintances or friends with him.
Well, I knew him back in Chicago when he used to come through a long, long time ago. He was still living in Detroit then.
Uh-huh.
But he would play in Chicago regularly, and we became immediate friends the first time I met him.
Would you remember the place and time and situation?
It was a club. I think it was called the Club Paradise. It was owned by a disc jockey named Big Bill Hill in Chicago. And John was playing there, and we had a good time. And had a good time ever since that.
Now, was he playing or were you playing that
He
night?
Played there, and yeah. I went to see John Lee Hooker. It was the first time I'd known him to be in Chicago on that particular date. There were some other bands there, too, and it was a big hall. Mm-hmm. That's where they recorded a live album of Muddy and Buddy Guy and I forget who else. Uh-huh. I don't remember the name of that album, but it wasn't that night. It was on another occasion. Well, then later I came out to California, and then later John Lee moved out to California.
Yeah, what was it that kind of brought the whole gang from the Chicago area and stuff? They all seemed to migrate out to the Bay Area.
Well, one thing... there was probably lots of reasons, but one of them was the underground radio. They were playing blues, like, you know. In Chicago, you could get some blues on the radio, but not like out on the West Coast. It was like something exotic, man. People love blues. And all these big rooms up and down the whole West Coast, like the Fillmore Auditorium and the Avalon. And I mean, I'd never seen so many people in one place. I was used to these rough little blues bars, and here it was in these places that had hundreds of people in them screaming for the blues.
When did you come out to the Bay Area? When did you make the move?
In 67, I came out. That's when my first album came out, and not long after it came out, I started getting calls from people to come play here and there, and I kept putting them off till somebody out in California offered me a whole month of work if I just come out. And I thought, well... okay.
Was that Bill Graham at the time, or who was it?
That was my first gig, at the Fillmore. It was another guy. It was a guy named Vaco from K-San or something.
Yeah, K-San had started right around 67, 68, yeah.
And Bill Donahue and those guys. Uh-huh. They somehow put together this little tour. And, man, I got off the plane and... I originally thought I'd go back to Chicago, but after about 5-10 minutes, I knew I wouldn't go back to Chicago.
Turn that return plane ticket in. And
yeah, I mean, the weather was nice, people were nice, and there was lots of work. Mm-hmm. It paid good money compared to what I had known.
Well, now, I'm trying to remember. Did you start out in Mississippi?
Yeah, I was born in Mississippi. Then I grew up in Memphis and then on to Chicago and... then out to California.
Yeah, I was wondering where, because what were you? Were you Memphis Charlie at one point or something?
Well, when I moved to Chicago, I got to know a lot of blues singers around there. Big Joe Williams started calling me Memphis Charlie.
Oh, okay.
He gave me that name.
Yeah, I was going through, I was going to ask you about some of the stuff that's on the internet. It's like I was looking you up, and it says that you used to run moonshine in an old Lincoln. Is that true?
A 1950 Lincoln, yeah. It had a big trunk on it, and I could put... well, it wasn't in bottles. It was in cans, these 5-gallon cans. I'd pick it up.
From where to where did you run it?
Well, it was a guy. Well, I shouldn't.
It was a guy. That's all you need to say. Yeah, not specific. But.
He was out from not far from Ripley, Tennessee. I'd go up there, and they'd fill my trunk up. And I'd bring it into Memphis. There were some guys there that bottled it up. And And I would take it on sometimes over up into Arkansas and southern Missouri and places like that.
Now, was that a profitable venture for you?
Well, for me, I mean, I was just, you know, 16. I'd get $50 for a run. That was a lot of money back then.
And would it take you a day to do the run or a couple days?
Oh, no more than a day. I mean, you know, you see these movies like Thunder Road, and it wasn't anything like that.
You weren't running roadblocks?
No, I wouldn't. I just take this from one point to the other point and go home and get some money.
Did you ever have an incident? You know.
There was one time when the police were following me, and I know they were following me because I went all the way around the block, and they went all the way around the block, and I don't know why they were following me, but I pulled into my driveway, and they just kept going.
And you went, whew.
Well, I'd been thinking about going to Chicago, and I went shortly after that.
It was time to move on, huh?
Yeah.
Were you playing music at that time? Were you, like, playing the harmonica and driving down the road with a load full of hooch?
I was playing, and I just only because I love blues, and I'd made it a point to get to know all the blues singers I could find around Memphis, but not with the idea of being professional. It never occurred to me it was something I'd be able to do as a profession. I just loved the music and wanted to play it and wanted to learn it and meet the guys that played it and hang out and have a good time. And, boy, I had a really good time.
Well, now, most people, when they fall in love with the blues, they want to be the guitar player. How did you come to be the harmonica player?
Well, I do play guitar. And, in fact, I'll play a tune tonight on guitar, maybe two. I don't know.
All right.
But when I got up to Chicago, there were, like, tons of guitar players, not that many harmonica players. And people started offering me work as to play harmonica, and that got my attention and got me really focused on harmonica, so I just stuck with harmonica.
Were you influenced by any particular guys that were blowing at the time?
Well, I was influenced by everybody. You know, everybody I thought had something to offer, and I liked them all. So I didn't, like, sit down and memorize everything that one guy did or something. I mean, everybody knew how to play juke, but I just soaked it up, you know. Sonny Boy, both Walters, Big Boy, Walter and Little Walter, and a lot of guys. There was other harmonica players a lot of people never heard of. A guy named, like, Little Addison was a guy, and there was a guy named Johnny Moment. There was a lot of harp players around that I knew. Man. Junior Wells. Junior lived right around the corner from me in Chicago.
That must have been a good time.
Oh, man, it was a blast. I was young and had no responsibilities, and I was out for a good time.
Well, you still seem like you're out for a good time.
Yeah, but not in the same manner.
Yeah, don't do the same things, huh?
Yeah.
Well, people are going to get to see exactly where you're at tonight. You're at the Center for the Arts. Would you like to play one for us? Yeah.
Well, you got a record of one, don't you? It's easier for me.
I see that case sitting there, though. You know, I mean, that's the real deal. When we got you here, we need at least one or two from the.
Well, I can just play you a few little licks here.
Yeah, whatever you feel like. We got Charlie Musselwhite here on KVMR on a Saturday.
It's the no-name blues.
That's great. It's just wonderful to hear that, you know? It's got that distinctive sound. You know, I guess we should mention, we lost one of your friends, too, another one of the great harmonica players in the last month, Norton Buffalo.
Yeah, what a surprise and a shock and what a loss, too. I mean, he was a great guy, he was a great player, and really a humorous fellow. I mean, we used to just laugh and laugh and laugh. He was a great guy to just be around, you know. And I think anybody that knew him is going to miss him till we meet again.
Yeah. You guys must have gotten together in some heart blow-offs at some point, I would think.
I don't remember if we actually... I know, yeah, we did play together. And we did some tours together, too. I remember one we did in Hawaii. And the last time we really had a chance to hang out was camping in Hawaii. I was... Somehow he found where I was camping, him and Lisa, and they
You mean like tent camping and stuff?
Yeah, right by the ocean in Oahu on Maui. And they came and hung out, and we had just a really great visit and a good time.
Just sitting on the beach? Did you guys play together on the beach? Or
I just remember laughing a lot, and yeah. We had a lot of good food to eat, too.
Yeah. Well, you must have had a lot of good experiences with the Bay Area musicians over the years. What kind of stands out as fond memories for you?
The first thing I remember is like playing at the Fillmore. That was just it seemed like such a huge place, too. Now when I go in there, it doesn't seem all that big. But, man, the first time I walked in there, it was as big as a Walmart, it seemed like to me. There were a lot of good times there, and Bill Graham would have great lineups of people, and he introduced a lot of music to people that they ordinarily wouldn't have known about, but they trusted his taste, and they'd always go, and they'd discover all these new artists, new to them, you know. And over the years, you know, hanging out with John Lee and going over to his house and stuff like that, and gosh, it's just endless, all the people coming and going and the shows and... I could write a book about it. Maybe I will one day.
Have you ever done anything about your history and stuff? Have you put that down?
Oh, I keep little notes and things that someday I think might go into some kind of a book. I don't know.
Yeah. I think a lot of people would be interested because you've had quite a life.
I've been asking people to email me or send me stuff they remember because I don't remember a lot of things or... I don't remember all the details that they might remember and to help put together some of these stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I was reading where, are you Choctaw or Cherokee?
Well, I thought it was Choctaw, but one of the last times I talked to my mother, she said, I don't know where you got that. You're Cherokee. And I said, oh, okay. So I don't know. Her hobby was genealogy, which tracing family history back. So she knew she's got just tomes of books she's written on the history.
Mm-hmm. Were you 50% Cherokee then? Or?
Oh no, not 50%.
How much?
I don't know what the percentage is. I'd have to look at. I don't think it's not even near 50%.
Yeah.
I'm like a mongrel. I've got like. Something like 9 nationalities or something.
You're an American.
Yeah. We go way back. I mean, my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother was the first non-Indian woman to cross the Appalachian Mountains. And she got captured by the Indians in something called the Draper's Meadow Massacre, which happened that was the West at that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And there was a book written about her called Follow the River. That's how she made her way back to her homestead, was she followed the river. It's a long story.
That's going to be part of the book you're going to write.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and now here we are in the year 2009, and Charlie Musselwhite is still putting out some great stuff, huh?
Oh, yeah, there's more to come. I got a new album be out probably next April.
Okay, what's that? You know the title yet on that?
No, it didn't have a title. I'm in a movie, too, called Pig Hunt.
Tell us about Pig Hunt.
It's a horror movie.
Oh, man.
It hadn't been released officially yet, but it keeps showing up in little special event showings. Last time it played was on Hate Street at the Red Vic. But it's about a 3,000-pound wild killer pig, and there's all these people that there's bikers and veterans and hippies and dope dealers and an array of people that come together, and a lot of people get hurt.
Oh, man. And what's your part? What do you do?
I'm a guy that plays a little country store, and a guy named Charlie that plays harmonica.
At the country store, yeah.
And some people come in asking for directions, and have about a dozen lines, and I send them on their way to all kinds of mayhem.
So you don't get attacked by the pigs, though?
Not in the movie, but supposedly there's a sequel, and we'll see what happens.
Oh, so there might be a
follow-up. If that happens. And my wife Henrietta's in it, too.
Oh, what is she doing it?
She's standing behind me putting corn can on the shelf and giving dirty looks.
Oh, have you been in any other films?
I was in the Blues Brothers 2000.
Oh, okay. You know, the Blues Brothers was just on last night. I was watching it like 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever.
Well, this is the sequel to the first one.
Right.
And I did some music for Into the Wild, the one that Sean Penn produced, and some other movies I don't remember right now.
Yeah. Well, what was that like doing a soundtrack? Does he just get music and then add it, or does he give you this film and say put
music
to it?
Well, Sean Penn was there. He would tell me now, okay, in this scene, you know, like a guy's walking down the road feeling depressed, and then he sees an eagle and he gets really happy.
And so you just
in a nutshell. So I would watch the scene, and I would, as he's feeling sad, I'd play kind of mournful, and then when he sees the eagle, then I start playing happy. And there were some parts that were, it was written music, and I had to play it like it was written. And fortunately, I'd taught myself how to read. But most of it was just sort of improvising to the scene. You just watch it and play to it.
It's interesting being a musician directed by Sean Penn.
Yeah, it was. He's a real nice guy. You know, I'd look back into the control booth, and he'd give me the thumbs up, like, that was a good one.
So what's it like being a band leader as Charlie Musselwhiter? Do you just let them kind of do the business and you come in and be Charlie? Are you the boss?
Well, I don't, you know, there's a lot of stuff to do. I mean, there's a booking agency that handles all that, and there's a manager that handles all that stuff, and Henrietta is like my personal manager. She handles a lot. And so I just try to show up on time.
I was going to say, show up on time is pretty much it now, huh?
Yeah.
A lot different than the old days, huh? Or I guess in the old days you showed up on time, too.
Yeah, usually I'm the first one there.
Has that always been like that? You've been on time all
the time? Well, I hate to be late, and I hate to hang up anybody up, although I was late getting here today.
Well, it sounds like that's just being considerate, though.
Well, it's just, you know, why waste time somewhere else? I don't want to miss the boat. You know?
Well, what's your favorite thing about playing the harmonica when you're on stage? What makes it what gives you the juice?
Oh, it's real rewarding when you see people smiling and dancing and having a good time. That's hard to beat. Last night I played at the Biscuits and Blues in San Francisco, and these two young ladies came up, and they were just all excited, wanted to have their picture made and with me and stuff like that. And turned out they didn't know anything about blues and never heard of me, and somebody had just taken them to the club, and they were just blown away. They couldn't believe how much they enjoyed themselves and liked the music and bought all my records and or CDs, they call them now.
Yeah.
And so that's rewarding when somebody discovers you and they become fans.
It's amazing how people that have never heard the blues, once they are experienced with it, it changes.
I always say, you know, properly introduced to the blues, you'll love it for the rest of your life.
Oh, I'll bet. And you travel all over the world, too. You still doing, like, Europe and stuff?
I'll be going next year, yeah.
And I imagine the reception over there is just tremendous as well.
It's pretty good. They like it a lot, yeah. They sure do.
Yeah. Well, it's just great to have you visiting us. You're at the Center for the Arts in Grass Valley this evening, 8 o'clock show, and I imagine we're just going to tear the roof off, huh?
Nobody's happier than I am to be right here. I'm happy to be anywhere, but I'm especially glad to be here. And I know we'll have a good time tonight.
Oh, we're going to have a wonderful
Bring your dancing time. Shoes.
Well, you think you could give us another 60 seconds or a couple minutes there?
All right, here's a little slower one.
Very short, very sweet. Thank you very much. Charlie Musselwhite, it has been a pleasure to have you here with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We'll see you tonight at the Center for the Arts.
All righty.
We're going to roll on out with one from your album Signature, and I think this one was appropriate. It's called Make My Getaway. See you down the road, Charlie.
Okay, thank you.